spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat. The human drama of athletic competition.
This is the Monday Night Sports Show, sponsored by Virgin Active Cardiff.
Hello, I'm Francis Taylor, and this is the Monday Night Sports Show. I'm here with Simon Williams and Yusuf Haider, and our special studio guest, Wales and Liverpool striker Craig Bellamy. In a revealing and emotional interview, we'll be discussing Craig's groundbreaking work in Sierra Leone through the Craig Bellamy Foundation and discovering more about the opportunities and inspiration he is giving to so many young people in a country rebuilding itself after a brutal civil war. We'll also be talking international football, Wales' stagnation under John Toshack and rejuvenation under the late Gary Speed. We'll also discuss some of the managers Craig has played under during his long and successful club career.
So, Yusuf, it was wonderful to meet Craig Bellamy the other day. And just, you know, tell us your impressions of the man and the interview itself.
I mean, first of all, Craig Bellamy seems to be, you know, he's been around for such a long time. I've been watching his career for a very long time as an avid Welsh football fan. You know, he was a rising star right through all the way to what he is now. You know, former captain, played for several different clubs and just, to have the opportunity, really, through Radio Cardiff, to sit down with somebody of his status really was amazing. And to meet the guy, sometimes you have these moments where they say you should never meet your heroes because they'll just end up letting you down. Well, this didn't. It wasn't one of those situations whatsoever. My estimations of the guy went up a great deal because he's, you know, he's been a controversial character in the past. People have got various opinions of him. But when you actually meet someone and get the measure of a man, that's what happened, really. And it was a brilliant experience.
So, Simon, you know, you've heard what Yusuf said there. For you as well, what did you sort of get from the whole experience?
In mainly about his Sierra Leone project. I mean, I don't think many people really knew that much about him and... Well, I mean, we'd probably heard of this Sierra Leone project, but we hadn't really knew that much about it. And it was interesting for him to tell us a lot more about it and how he started it and his hopes for it for the future and where he'd like to see it going.
So then here is the Craig Bellamy interview in full that we recorded recently. It's a great pleasure to welcome to the Monday Night Sports Show Wales and Liverpool striker Craig Bellamy. Craig, thank you very much for giving up your time and talking to us today.
No, thank you very much for having me.
We'd like to talk to you about your work in Sierra Leone. It's a project obviously very close to your heart. And can you tell us a little bit about when it was that you first visited the country?
That's the first question I usually do get asked. It was around about 2007. I had a friend working over in Sierra Leone, so you know, it seemed a good idea at the time. My wife was pregnant with our daughter, Lexi, and so you know, she went over the fly zone, so she wasn't able to fly. So I thought it'd be a nice chance to go and see, you know, a completely different country, different culture, and get the tour and also see my friend and spend some time with him, but go and see a different environment and you know, just going, you know, it's difficult sometimes in football. And when I do get holidays, unfortunately, you know, unfortunately for me, I get, you know, to go to really nice places and relax, and it's good to spend time with the family. But, you know, I've always enjoyed playing in different countries like Belarus, and but also, you know, I remember Armenia, seeing different cultures and different, you know, different lines of poverty. But in football, you're, you know, hotel, coach, training ground, hotel, coach, stadium, fly straight back. So you don't get to see anything. So for me, it was a good opportunity to just relax, tour the country, just go and see, you know, a different, you know, a different way of living for myself. And it was just, it just struck me, I, in this day and age, I shouldn't be, because we are made aware, we're quite lucky in this country where, you know, the level of exposure we get in, you know, the charities bring home, you know, like your comic reliefs and, you know, the sports stuff. It's just so much going on. We are aware of what does happen. And but when you see it for your own eyes and you go out there and see it for yourself, was difficult.
And so describe some of the conditions that you witnessed, because obviously they, you know, I suppose, would you describe them as life-changing?
Yeah, clearly that. But like I said, you know, and I went back, you know, what I really meant to say is, in this day and age, it still is difficult to understand how a country can, you know, and certain people can live like this. You know, with all the wealth and everything that goes on, and, you know, and in where we are here, listen, we still have poverty. You know, I'm not saying, you know, we should be very fortunate, we're very lucky for what we have, but there's different lines of poverty.
It's a different class, isn't it? I suppose you'd say. Yeah, absolutely.
Completely.
Yeah.
And it was just really, you know, I went to an orphanage. I seen, you know, young children just completely abandoned. And the facilities and how they lived was just on a completely another level that I just weren't really prepared for. But I also got to see the effects of, you know, a civil war. You know, eight, 9 years strong, have just finished, and just what is left behind, and the devastation, and children who've been through that, and, you know, have lost parents, brothers, and all the elder members who have lost limbs, and really got to see a different way of life, and a different, it just brought home to me, you know, the only difference between me and these, you know, people from Sierra Leone is I was literally born in Cardiff, here in Wales. You know, so there's no difference apart from that.
So tell us a little bit about the impact your visit had on you. Was there an instant desire to become involved there, or was it something that you decided after reflection?
It wasn't really instant, because, you know, you're always aware, you know, in Africa, but, you know, certain parts of Africa, but obviously in Sierra Leone, corruption is, you know, is a huge, huge problem from top to bottom. So you are made aware of that, and, you know, any business plan, anything like that, is very difficult. It has to be charity, because, you know, the business plan is, you know, if you go in, you're basically looking to take as much out and get out as quick as possible. And, you know, I see so much, I've seen so much out there, because obviously the diamonds and everything involved. I've seen so many rich people spending a lot of money mining. I got to see that firsthand as well, and I seen the little impact that the people were having there. You know, they, you know, their wealth was just basically just kind of stolen from right in front of them, and there was nothing they could do. They could just buy, you know, the local chief a Jeep. He was looked after, but his whole land and the people who lived on there were just, you know, shipped out. And I got to see that for myself, because I toured the whole country, and I seen very wealthy people who weren't Sierra Leone, by the way. You know, they were from the UK, they were from Lebanon, they were from different parts of the world, who were using, you know, that country as just, you know, for their resources. For me, was just, you know, it wouldn't be nice for someone to go and do something for these people, you know, give them the opportunity of that we were all very fortunate to have.
Absolutely.
So how was the academy itself established?
To be honest, I didn't really know what to do. I was just, I thought about an orphanage. There was a lot of stuff I thought about, like a school. But then, you know, the numbers and, you know, if I just opened up a school that was for free, unfortunately, a lot of schools there you do have to pay, which is seems incredible. You know, when the poorest countries in the world and by the poorest people in the world have to pay for education, which, you know, we are fortunate here. It did, it left me loads of areas. I didn't know which angle, what to do, and I know if I opened up a school, then I would have, you know, 2.5 million children going there, and I couldn't be able to cope with it because it was free and the education was obviously going to be at a good standard because I was funding it. Mm-hmm. So really we come up with the idea, well, look, you know, you do play football. Football is what you know. Let's try and use a football-based academy, but education key, because that's what I wanted. I don't particularly is too interested in about football, but I only use football just to bring the numbers down. By having trials and having, you know, a selected few on football ability, but you also have to be academically at a certain level. Otherwise, you can be the next Messi, but if you can't read or write, you still can't come into the academy. You know, so they have to go away. They have to, you know, learn. They have to go to school. They have to do that themselves. And when they get to a certain level, then we can bring them in. You might not be very good at football, but also you're academically, you're very good, then you get a great opportunity to come into the academy. So, you know, they're the rules we live by. Okay. But, you know, it was difficult because we were having, you know, there is no academy in the country, we're the only academy. That is fact. They live there day in, day out, which I fund for personally myself. But it was difficult because we were having trials and you're having, you know, 5,000-10,000 boys turning up for a trial, you know, all saying at the age of 13, 12, which was literally impossible. So we had to learn, because we want the right age groups. We don't want, because it's no good to them. You know, we're trying to educate them and trying to give them the best start in life. Why are we going to say, go on, you have to lie about your age as well, though? Because it just goes against everything we're going about. You know, I'm not interested in footballers. I'm interested in, you know, human beings. So no one lies by that age. We got to the bottom, you know, we weigh them. We learned a lot of techniques from different countries like Ivory Coast, how to get to the bottom of the age groups. Now we're 99% confident we do have the age groups. And then basically, because of the group of boys, it was difficult to pick trialists. And we have one boy who looked incredible, but we knew he was 4 or 5 years over. Of course, he's saying he's the age because it's an opportunity of a lifetime, but like I said, it weren't about football. So as soon as we nailed that down, we got the numbers down quite a lot. But we were still over the top with numbers. But then we thought, well, listen, how are we, you know, we can't keep just pulling trials up every month, going to a village and having 10,000 kids, or going to this village. And so there must be a league we can go and watch these young kids. But we realised there was no football league, there was no structure, and the football is huge out there. Mm. You know, like you wouldn't believe, it's a passion, you know. Where, like, they'd be in a hut with a tiny little telly, there'd be like 1,000 people trying to watch it. It was just incredible. Mm. So what we come up with the idea of, well, why don't we work with UNICEF and try and do a league for age groups? But basically, you know, the kids have to go to school, the coaches, we have to educate ourselves. You know, you don't beat children if they lose, or you don't, because that's what they were taught. So we had to re-educate, you know, the coaches as well. We had to screen them, obviously, make sure they were fit to coach. The young children, then the rules were you had to go to school. We got an aerial manager. UNICEF were incredible, they were right behind it. So basically after every game then we had children getting asked questions with, you know, about HIV, and also then questions academically as well, and if they got them right they got offered, you know, certain extra points. But if the teams didn't win, they were also allowed to then go into the villages and help the local chiefs, you know, doing local projects and, you know, like commercial, like, sorry, not commercial wise, but, you know, working out, say the local chief needed the well draining and because it was causing a few problems, and they would then go in there and, you know, just, and then our assessor from the league would go out and award them points. So a team might not win a game football wise, but by doing so much for their community, they would get points off the back of that. They could end up top of the league. And it just came on from there, and it just, the more ideas we were bouncing off each other, like I'd go and meet the parents, what more do you want us to do? Do you want us, any ideas from you? And they would say, well, yeah, there's a local area that needs, you know, there's a lot of snake bites there, unfortunately. Sierra Leone does have 7 of the world's top 10 deadliest snakes. It's, you know, it's, and it was a very area where from village to village, they were cutting across the grass, long grass. You know, can the young local team, are they able to do that? And, you know, the next week they were there, macheted it all down. Built a mud path, so it was a safe path for them to walk. They got awarded 4 points, so it was just, the community's benefited, but, you know, the young children have benefited as well. They've got appreciation for their community. They're big standards, you know, they're huge figures in their community now. And also, you know, football-wise, we monitor. Just because you didn't make the trial or fortunate to get in this year, we still keep an eye on you because you're in our league. And then we can also draft you in. Like I said, if you're a very good footballer, but academically, you know, it's not the end of the road. If you improve on that, then we'll bring you in. So we just monitor the whole situation. Now we've got a girls' league. We're doing a pilot for an amputee league as well. So it's just really gone on from there. It's had a huge impact in the whole country, and that's, you know, that's from top to bottom. You know, truancy. I say truancy, but young children weren't going to school. It was at, the last figures were at 86% when we first started, and now it is at, I think it is at 18%. So. UNICEF were incredible, you know, UNICEF backed it, but unfortunately for us, UNICEF only do 2 to 4 year projects.
You see the determination of these kids and how, you know, what you're doing helps to drive them on in life. How do you think there's kids in the UK who can and learn a little bit from, you know, what those kids have gone through and what they're now doing to sort of help themselves, so to speak?
I always find that it's difficult because was I fortunate? Yes, I was, definitely. Did I ever, you know, I always had a feeling I was lucky and, you know, there's other kids, you know, like your parents would always say, young kids in Africa don't have this to eat and, you know, don't, you know, and this, but I was just, went over my head, if I'm being honest. I just think it's a part of our culture. It's not, I don't think it's our fault as human beings. It's just part of where we're brought up in. The difference for them, you know, it's a different environment. You know, they have nothing. Their parents have nothing. You know, he was captain of my academy. I first went to meet his parents. Well, fortunately, his father was dead. His mum brought him up, but I had to bring up 5 of his brothers and another, you know, their youngest daughter. With his older brother, he had to take on the mantle. Barely having 1 meal a day. No beds, you know. So it's just, that is enough to spur some young child to do something, you know. And we're very fortunate we don't have that. But it doesn't mean to say, you know, young children should be very fortunate. Listen, we're just born in different, you know, areas. It's, and it's just how it works. It's not, I don't blame any young child over here and think you should be very lucky and try and put them down. It's just a simple fact of, you know, how we're brought up and where we're brought up and what we're brought up into.
Do you have, you know, obviously the academy's well up and running, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have plans to maybe expand your role in Sierra Leone or possibly branch out into other countries in Africa or the third world?
I haven't. I would like to do Liberia. I've met George Weah, and for me, he's the number one of all African players. He's the best, but also as a human being as well. You know, he's you know, the money that guy put into Liberia to try and help people, and Liberia, you know, unfortunately for them is probably, I mean, being one of the worst hit countries in Africa for war. It's always very unstable, and you know, unfortunately for Sierra Leone, the troubles in Liberia went into Sierra Leone. You know, the IUF were founded in Liberia. So, you know, they do affect neighbouring countries as well. But Liberia, for me, is the source. You know, it's a stable Liberia, is a stable Sierra Leone, a stable Guinea, and, you know, it's a certain parts of West Africa. So, you know, and George Weah is, you know, he's trying to become president. He's tried a couple of times. But he's gone and re-educated himself. He's, you know, and like I said, the money that guy put into his country to try and improve facilities for children and... I'd like to do an academy in his name, just for, you know, my appreciation of where I feel he is as a human being. So, look, you know, I've got to get this up and going, and I've got to get it. You know, I've made a commitment. This is me. I pay for it a lot myself. I've put a lot in myself. It's not for an investment. It's not for me to. You know, this is. I've been very fortunate to earn what I do. So I'd like. Always thought I would like to donate and give certain amount away because there's only so much you need to live on. I believe, you know, but. If it did, if any bonuses did come from this in Sierra Leone and say, for instance, I did have a drug bar, which I'm not saying, you know, that's very, very unlikely, and he was worth money, and it helped pay them for my academy, then I'd love to then just go straight into Liberia and let that fund that, you know, and just build one under his name, because...
Ultimately, that can only help, can't it? If you discover someone like that, you know, that can only benefit those kids and future generations.
I have my own contract where I do not earn a penny and I will never earn a penny from my academy. I cannot receive any money. I can't do anything. It's, whatever gets earned goes straight back into the academy. So, yeah, would I love, you know, of course I would, because it just funds more for, it keeps the sailing loan one growing, but it also allows me to go into, you know, the country I would really love to go into, you know, which would be Liberia.
Yeah.
Can I just ask that before you went to Sierra Leone, did you have any inkling that this is something that may come out of it, or was it just completely surprised? Did you have plans maybe to do something like this?
I'd like to do something. I probably thought Wales more than anything. I've always thought maybe up in the valleys, and I would like to do something up there, because I do feel, you know, unfortunately in Wales that, you know, there is poverty, and unfortunately for a lot of the, you know, children in the valleys, they're hit quite hard. So I always thought I'd maybe like to be able to do something there, but you know, I have a love for Welsh football, and I have a love, so to try and do a football academy there, I would come straight into rivalry with someone else, and, you know, and this, and so going to a place like Sierra Leone sort of made my mind up, you know. Yeah. I do, you know, like when you asked the question earlier, listen, I think we're very fortunate, I really do. Yeah. You know, I know there people do have a hard time, so I completely, you know, and I'd love to be able to help, do something for them as well, but you know, when you see people in Sierra Leone and the standard of living they have, it just, I had to do something, you know, and it had to be there.
This is clearly something really close to your heart, and it's not something that you do for any personal ego trip, clearly. This is very much your heart being poured into something meaningful, yeah?
Yeah, well,
does it frustrate you that maybe that there isn't enough people don't know about what you do, you know?
No, but I've chosen that.
You've chosen that.
Yeah. I didn't want it to be like, well, look, this is what I do, and it's not for other people to... Mm. to, you know, to judge or to, I don't do it for that. I do it for my own. I can go to sleep at night, you know, and it's a nice feeling to have when I go out there, and, you know, it's for my children, you know, for my wife. It's it belongs to them as well. It's our, it's for us to be able to, you know, look back and be proud of. Look, I am proud. I've unfortunately for me, I've only just started to learn and find myself a little bit, but I'm proud of my career. I've always thought I wanted more. I didn't do enough, and. Only the last couple of months I've looked back and thought, do you know what? My career's been incredible. It's been incredible. And it took me a while to get to that stage. Unfortunately, you know, it's affected a lot of people around me as well, because I've always kept looking. Why do you think I've moved away so much? And, you know, I've lived a lot on my own, because that drive's just been too much. And it's been an obsession where they should have just kept it as commitment and enjoyed people most close to me. So I have paid that price. Yeah. But, yeah, I do find, you know, giving more and being involved in this is for my family, and like I said, you know, football will always be there, and you know, I will be remembered for football. I know that, but one thing I want to be remembered more for is what I do in Sierra Leone, and I don't need to spread the word and get on board and this and that. You know, if I would prefer this interview to be in Sierra Leone, unfortunately, we have to do it somewhere in Cardiff. You know, I'd much prefer you be out there seeing it all for yourself and then comment me on it and. Yeah. You know, that would suit me.
We'd like that as well, actually. Yeah.
But I done a documentary with ITV, and you could speak to ITV, you could speak to the people, who, you know, Stefan. It took a lot of persuading for me to do it, because I didn't want to do it. I didn't want, and in the end, credit to him, I didn't want it to be about me, you know, the Craig Bellamy show, and look what I do, and, you know, I see some of the comic relief stuff, and it's great, they go out and do it, no problem, but a lot of it,
doesn't sit well with me.
No, okay, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't. It's a little bit of PR-ish. And, and I was adamant I didn't want it to be nothing, because I don't want, you know, I preferred as little of me as possible. And they were great. They just said, look, put a microphone on. Do what you do natural word. You won't even know we're filming you. And then, of course, we're going to have to ask the odd word now and then. But just be yourself. Just be. And that's, honestly, I spent about 4 or 5 days and I didn't even know they were there. You know, and it was. And credit to them as well. You know, they didn't invade my privacy. They didn't, you know. They were brilliant. They were outstanding. Just let me relax. And next thing I know, I had a documentary out of it, and it felt like I didn't even, you know, do anything for it. And that's the only thing I have done. You know, that's the only thing, because UNICEF have pulled out, because, like I said, they only do two, three-year projects. You know, and that's a credit to UNICEF as well, because you can't just keep funding my league.
No.
They got to go on to someone else,
exactly.
Which is right. And I completely, there was no, you know, that's the best way to go about it. And they're the best organisation in the world. If you got UNICEF with you, you know you're organised. You know you're doing something right. And yeah, so for me was, well, I fund my academy. I pay for all that, which is my money. But who's going to fund the league? Who's funding the kids elsewhere? And so by doing a documentary, did help raise funds for that. You know, did help raise funds for the league. So, you know, I am aware. I do. you know, because of the commitment I've made, I do have to do documentaries. You know, I do have to do certain interviews in certain times to promote the foundation, not my academy. My academy's separate. I do that by paying for myself. But, you know, the leagues, then I do have to, you know, do stuff off the back of that. But only recently, you know, don't forget, this has been going on for 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I've spent a good 3-4 years without even saying the odd interview every now and then. But I preferred hardly anyone knowing, because then, you know, I got less grief and I got less talked about. So
you can just get on with doing what you want to do.
Exactly. I do it for my family, and I do it for, you know, for us. So, you know, I'd love to be able to take the kids over in a few years' time and, you know, maybe my wife and, you know, and just, this is what we've done. Look at this. Look at the lives and the opportunities we've, you know, we've been lucky enough to give children.
Fantastic. Tune in to the Monday Night Sports Show with Francis, Yusuf and Simon. On 98.7 FM, Radio Cardiff.
Radio Cardiff Studios, for recording and mixing at broadcast quality. Studio hire available for independent producers, rappers, bands and singers. Experienced sound technicians for all types of music in a friendly working environment. With a previous history of delivering high standard and top quality audio products.
Yo, any studios around here, bruv?
It's like you might need to come down to the studio, see what's good and check it out. So much things you do around here. DJ recording crew around here. All different styles you do this year. Take time and think. Write rhymes and we link. Write rhymes and we link.
Radio Cardiff Studios. Why not give us a call on 02920-229-672. On 02920-229-672. Radio Cardiff Studios.
Tune in to the Monday Night Sports Show with Francis, Yusuf and Simon on 98.7 FM Radio Cardiff.
You made your debut in March 1998 against Jamaica and scored your first goal against Malta the following year.
Yeah, Malta, yeah.
What was it like the first time you represented Wales?
I've always like been set myself goals, and you know, it was always, you know, I wanted to make my league debut at 17. I was fortunate to do that. Then as soon as I made my league debut, it was like, you know, I want to be a regular, and then it was like, then I want to be an international, and it just kept going on like that. And you know, to make my debut, you know, it was against Jamaica. They just qualified for the World Cup, you know, one or two decent players. I think it was the first time they have qualified, so it was a good little, you know, feeling, obviously, you know, with Jamaica coming over. I think Bewtown and all that were happy as well, you know. So, it was good. It was good because it was at Ninian Park, which was perfect for me. It was great. So, it was just, I came on. I remember I should have scored really, because if I would have followed my run, kept doing my run, I would have had a tap in. But I hesitated, and you know, things can happen like that. But then, you know, the aim was then straight away was, now I want to be a regular. You know, which I do, you know, I look back now and just, of course I had that drive, and of course it was great to look for another target. But you know what? I think sometimes we're always looking to that next target, and sometimes we don't acknowledge what's just happened. You know, where we should acknowledge what's just happened. Acknowledge, you know, I've just made my debut, I'm 18 years of age. What a great feeling that is. And don't block it out your mind and then suddenly think, no, this ain't good enough. Now I want to be a regular. It's like, you know, which unfortunately these are tactics I've only just learned. But I should have just sat back and just said, you know what a great achievement this is. You know, enjoy it today, enjoy it tomorrow, then back to work again, you know. So, you should always enjoy, you know, reaching targets, and Wales was definitely one of them.
Well, speaking of reaching targets, if we move forward a couple of years, every young football fan's dream is obviously to captain his country. And a couple of years later, in 2006, you were made full-time captain by John Toshack. Can you just tell us, all the rest of us, how that actually feels to achieve?
No, it was great. It's a great feeling. I had the armband a couple of times before that, but you know, to get given it is an achievement. And it doesn't matter, you know. Listen, I'm Welsh, and you know, to me, to play for Wales is the most important thing. You know, bigger than, you know, I got to ask the question on LFC TV. Sorry, you know, what's more important, Liverpool or Wales? You know, there's. And I'm from Cardiff as well, and you asked me the same thing with Cardiff, playing for Wales. It isn't. It's Wales, you know. It's Wales. It's always been my number one, and I've tried my hardest to prove to people that. Unfortunately, you know, you'll never be able to win over everyone. you know. But even when I've been injured, I've always tried to turn up. And, you know, for me to get the captaincy then, I thought was a reward for all that as well. You know, because I played injured, and I played, you know, against the will at Newcastle, and, you know, the grief I had at certain times was very difficult for a young player. But I just thought, you know, what a great honour. What a great honour for everyone. You know, my parents, you know, my own children, you know, my own family, my own wife, you know, this is for us. And it was a very nice moment, and which I did cherish. You know, it's nice being, you know, sometimes being given a captaincy, because you don't have another game for a month, and you could also play club football and everything, but knowing at the back of your mind, you know, I'm national team captain.
Of course.
You know, and it's a nice feeling to have.
So the John Toshack era was a time of massive upheaval. Many players' international careers came to an end, and the youth were given a chance to shine. On a personal level, as we've just said, you got made the full-time captain. How would you evaluate Toshack's influence on Welsh football at that time?
It was a difficult time because Mark Hughes was good. You know, Mark Hughes proven he's good. He's one of the best managers I've been very fortunate to work for. You know, he's so professional, so organised. His training is very, very intense. You know, to play for Mark Hughes is very, very hard. You have to be at a certain, you know, your fitness, and he's a hard manager. But, you know, to watch him grow and to be under him for Wales was brilliant. But then, you know, John Toshack came in, and they were completely opposite. You couldn't get more opposite. I don't want to sound too negative with John, because, you know, it gets you nowhere, and it's no need to be. But it was difficult. It was the most difficult period I've had international-wise. You know, every game. You know, it's not nice when you're not able to compete. You know, I don't mind losing. Unfortunately, I've lost more than I've won. But being able to compete is important, and especially important for us as, you know, for us as Welsh people. You know, we know we're not going to win every game. We know, you know, but as long as we give a go and give a good account of ourselves, sometimes it's very important for us, just for who we are as people. And the amount of times, especially during our era, that we weren't even involved in a game. We just camped out. We put everyone behind the ball. We were so negative. But for me, there was excuses. There was always a reason behind it. And I couldn't buy into that. I found that very difficult. Older players retired, yeah. That was a given. But other older players were forced to retire as well, you know, which weren't ready to retire, and the team needed. Young players were thrown in, some good, some not so good. You know, some were given a chance when they clearly weren't good enough. And it was a difficult period for me as a player who, you know, had so much to give, having to watch it and, you know, be involved in it was the most testing period I've ever had in football. I learned a lot from that period, and that's the only thing I can take out of it, if I'm being honest, you know.
Carrying on with the international scene, obviously on the 27th of November last year, the world of football was stunned by Gary Speed's sudden death. You know, he was your friend, your coach. Tell us about, you know, how you felt when you heard that news, and what was your immediate sort of reaction to it?
No, I don't really want to say what I felt and my immediate reaction, because, you know, it's still very personal to me. But even probably to this day, it's still probably the most difficult situation I've ever been involved in. Mm. I still find it difficult now. Yeah. You know, now a day goes past. Mm. Now a day goes past that I don't think of it, and I don't think of him. Mm. You know, I was ready to retire. I was adamant. You know, I didn't want to play for Wales. I sort of had enough, really, what happened with John Toshack. And then to speak to him then, knowing I was ready to retire, he knew, you know, there's not one person in football who's known me better. You know, not one person. And by him knowing me, and he only took him 5 minutes, not even that, and I was ready to play again. You know, from me saying, no, I'm ready to retire, it took 5 minutes, if that, and I was ready. But then my conditions were I didn't want to be captain, you know, because I had to be captain, because what was going on, I had to stand up and
take the lead, so to speak.
Yeah. You know, I was sometimes doing team talks. Mm. You know, and I didn't. This is not rugby. Mm. You know what I mean? We're footballers. You know, this isn't rugby. Mm. You know, where he gets involved in all that. You know, we're footballers. I'm told what to do as well. And you know, I thought there was a lot of really exciting young players. Yeah. And he made it aware how much I could help him and, you know, the bigger picture, but also for him, I can help him become a manager. And that, I just, like, felt inspired by him straight away, which he had that knack. And then, but like I said, my conditions were I didn't want to be captain because I didn't want it to be look like I was running things as well, you know. I wanted him to be the manager, and, you know. But he wanted to lead by, you know, he wanted to speak to players and demand. He demanded such high standards. He was just straight, and I knew he was going to be an incredible manager.
Yeah.
But he needed players who were respected and old enough to follow them. So he would just leave sometimes things for me, where a certain boy would come down with a wrong T-shirt, and I'd be like, "Look, change your T-shirt." You know, where a player does that, not the man. You know, it's you've got to have your own control amongst yourselves and respect amongst yourselves. You can't always keep coming from the staff. Mm. And he made that aware to me.
Mm.
But I wanted Rambo to be captain. And we both agreed, you know, I was going to give it up as long as it was Rambo having it.
Right.
You know, I was adamant. I love this kid. Like, you know, I think he's, you know, I have so much admiration for him.
Yeah.
I know the injury went through because I had a similar injury in my cruise ship when I was his age as well. I probably come down harder on him than anyone else.
Mm.
You know, I'm probably stricter with Rambo than anyone. But I have that respect. I know his dad. I know, you know, from the same area as me. And I want this kid to do so well that I want him to be captain. I want him to take that responsibility. I want him to tell us when we can eat, tell us when we can't. And I have to act by it as well. So if I'm ready to eat dinner, I've got to wait for a kid 10 years younger than me to tell me.
Yeah.
But also, that's showing him respect, but showing the others he's the boss. He's the captain of this team. When I'm gone in a couple of years' time, he's going to be running things. And everything he's doing now, if he's keeping me in line and I'm 10 years older, you know, what's he going to be doing in a few years' time, you know? That's you lot are going to qualify. You know, with this manager, with you as a group of players, we can have one or two bad games now, which we were because we were over trying to pass, which that was the, you know, we weren't looking towards games. And, you know, this is how we're going to play. The bigger picture, we're going to qualify for Brazil, but we're going to have to go through a bit of hurt now at the moment, stick with it, and then gradually we're going to build. And like you said, we did. We just gradually built and built. And I just knew these group of players were going to qualify. I probably might not see it. Maybe I might not see Brazil, or we might not qualify. But if we don't qualify Brazil, these boys would be ready for the next tournament.
And it won't be for the lack of trying, will it?
Oh, of course.
Or competing.
Look, the aim is to try, but we've gone past. We do compete now. That's there.
Yeah.
That's a given. But it just, you know, for me, the last couple of games, you know, the Norway game was like the pinnacle for us.
Yeah.
You know, we went to Serbia. No, sorry, Serbia. I didn't mean to that. I only say Serbia because we classed it as Serbia. We went to Bulgaria thinking it was a Serbia game. Don't think this ain't Bulgaria now. This is qualifying game away against Serbia. Road to Brazil. We're going to have to sit back and let them have the ball. And I thought, well, I think we're a better team in Bulgaria. Let's not go out. But it's like, no, it's not about Bulgaria, it's about Serbia. Let them have it, and we're counter-attack. We've got to treat this like it's that game. Don't worry about what, you know.
Yeah.
And we let them have it, and then we just built from there and built and then run over them the last 20 minutes, half hour. We, you know, the game was, we were creating chances at the bow. There was only one team in at the last, and they were that clever. Him and Raymond were that clever. They just, you know, and then the Switzerland game was exactly the same just before, you know, a few days before. Let them have it. We've got to get used to defending. We've got to get solid. Now we know we can pass. We've learned that. Now we've got to defend. We've got to get solid. Because if we're going to qualify, we're going to have to nick points in Croatia. We're going to have to nick points in Serbia. Then we're going to have to be that way. And so we learned that. We defended, we got organised, and it was, you know, everything was over-exaggerated, but with a view to the qualifiers. And then come the Norway game, was like, now look, we've got that solid base. We just, you know, we've proved that by games. We've proved that attitude. We know where we're strong. Now this is a home game against Croatia or a Bulgaria or a Belgium, where we have to go at this team. We have to see the weaknesses. We have to go and attack them. And, you know, we worked on the attacking side then, you know, because we went through a few months of getting the passing right, bravery on the ball. We made a lot of mistakes and goals, but we got that right then. The two other games then, we're defending, let's get organised. So we're solid. We've got to get that solid base first. And then it was, what are we then? Home game, now let's go with the attack from the first minute. And this is how we're going to go about it. And they, you know, like Raymond and Gary were that clever. You know, Norway ranked 20th in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you that now. Norway didn't know what hit them first 35 minutes.
No.
And that was one of the best Wales performances I've ever been involved in with Wales. And that's better than Italy. It was, but, you know, they got played off the park.
Off the park,
you know, they changed formations. They tried to do, you know. Then we hit a bit of a rocky patch. during the second half. We didn't quite know, you know, because it was a lot of information. We're improving as a team, and, but in the last 10, 15 minutes, because of the work we do in the week, fitness-wise, we just steamrolled them again and scored two more goals. And I remember coming off thinking, do you know what? And it's the only time I've ever personally felt this. Before, I thought, well, we might need a little bit of luck here, or, you know, hopefully he stays fit. I just thought, we're going to qualify. You know, I didn't say it to him. I just honestly thought we're going to qualify. And then, you know, 2 weeks odd later, you just can't. It's not about football. It weren't about Wales. It weren't about... I never one minute thought about we're not going to qualify, or it was just, you know, I still can't get over it now. Like,
it's about a human being. It goes beyond anything, doesn't it?
It's, you know, it's not just... It weren't football. Like, it was, you know, a close friend.
Yeah.
You know, his father, his mum. You know, his wife, Louise. His kids. You know, I spent a lot of time with him after it. But it still doesn't make it easier, you know? It still doesn't. And it never will.
Would you say that Gary's greatest legacy is what you've been describing for the last few minutes?
Yeah, it is. It is.
That great, that almost maturity, would you say, in the way that Wales now looks at itself as a footballing nation, and then the players as a squad going into it believing?
It is, but I still... We've been knocked. There's no two ways about it, you know?
Yeah.
I see the players. I see the look. And it is nothing to do with Chris Coleman, you know? There's nothing he can do about this. It's so difficult for him because I knew how close he was to him.
Yeah.
You know, I think the last few years they weren't as close as what they once were, but I knew them as players and how close they were when I played with them. Yeah. It isn't about... I feel this is such a difficult job for Cookie, you know. I really feel for him. I think he's a very good manager, and I think he's got a very good group of players, but I just feel this period is difficult.
It's a hard mantle to take,
isn't it? It's so difficult. Yeah. And, you know, we haven't just lost Gary. You know, we lost Raymond. We lost... Adrian, we've lost 4 or 5 people in the backroom staff who were just immense, who were at the, you know, the first words I remember coming in was like, listen, boys, you know, this is Raymond. Like, Raymond's a hard, I was close to him and I argued with him constantly. And this guy was like, boys, do you know when it says, you know, I keep reading this and I read in the paper today, or, you know, international break. This is not a break.
It's not a break, no.
Don't think you're coming here from break from your clubs.
Yeah.
You're coming here, this is harder. You're playing against harder opposition, so you've got to train harder. So get that word break, international break, out your head. You're here for a top international. And if we're going to qualify, none of this meet up a week before and then think you can go out on a Saturday and maybe have an easy day Sunday, have a couple of hours later on. You know, we weren't allowed out the hotel. We weren't allowed to drink nothing. You know, it was only what we were given. It was, you know, nutrition, water, but also the staff led by example as well. No going to the bar in the evening and, you know, those days are gone. You know, we're not that team anymore.
No.
If we're going to qualify, this is serious. You know, we treat each other with respect. Discipline was at an all-time high level for me, which has got to be done. It's got to be right. You know, you have your time to enjoy yourselves. Of course you do. But with each other, but in the right environment, not going down Cardiff Bay on a Sunday and thinking you can have a good few hours, because do you know what, top athletes can't do that. And if you're that serious about qualifying, you can't do those things. And he just made it all away, you know.
You've talked a lot about, you know, obviously Gary Speed's ability as a coach and the respect you had for him. We've talked earlier today about you know, Sierra Leone and what you're doing to sort of inspire these kids with the academy, etc. Have you thought about, when your playing career does finally come to an end, about doing coaching badges or going into coaching and management yourself?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, you know, I would definitely like to become a manager. I would definitely like to go down that road, but you know, I have, there's so much I have to learn. There's so many areas I haven't, you know, nowhere near covered. And it's just going to be, you know, a long road for that as well. I want to be, you know, I want to be the best manager it can be, you know. But I have to do the work, you know. It can't just be given to me and on you go, and because somewhere along the line I will come unstuck. You know, I want a period of out of football where I can enjoy the people who mean most to me, but also go and watch a second division game, go and watch a conference game, then go and watch an international, then go here and just watch different styles, different shape, you know, different different ways teams play and how they go about. We'll go and watch different teams train. And
would you almost say it's like going back to being a fan again? Would you almost say?
Oh no, I don't.
Or not?
You're always a fan, like, you know. Yeah. You're always a fan.
Yeah.
That is a fact, you know, because yeah. I'll watch a game then, that means very little, and I'll still go and watch it, or I'll watch it on telly, or, you know, you always have that bug.
Mm.
You know, sometimes the game can frustrate you more than you believe, you know, where I've lost and I don't want to look at anyone, speak to anyone. I don't want to watch another game till next Saturday. Mm. Fortunately for me, I've got out of that habit now, you know. Do you know what? I give my best, and I give my best every time I play. I ain't going to beat myself up over something I have no control over. Mm. You know, if someone's better than you, they're better than you. You know, hold your head up high and praise them, you know. But don't alter who I am as a person. And, you know, that means I can't speak to the people closest to me for a couple of days. Mm. You know, it makes absolutely no sense. There's no way to live your life. And unfortunately for me, that's how I have lived my life. And, you know, it's not healthy, and it's not a good way to go about your, you know, go about yourself as a human being, and not an example to show to your children. Like, so, you know, I've learned a lot recently, and I've learned a lot over the last few months that, you know, I love this game, you know, but I'm not obsessed with it anymore. I'm just committed to it. And I just try and wake up, try and do things that make me happy, and play the game and make myself happy by playing, and try my best to, you know, be the athlete I can be. But if it's good enough on the day, then great. You know, enjoy it. If it isn't, hold your head up and enjoy it again. Enjoy it again, you know. You know, you've got to be, you know, you've just got to, and it doesn't matter whether it's football, any walk of life, you know. Mm. All you can do is give your best.
Mm.
And by doing that, you've always won. You know, so that's it. That's my bit of wisdom.
Very wise indeed.
Very wise indeed, yeah.
I don't think it would be doing your career justice if we didn't talk a little bit about some of the managers that you've played under, because, I mean, reading through, it makes very interesting reading, really. And just maybe your thoughts on a couple of them. If we said, for example, Bobby Robson, when you were at Newcastle.
Yeah, incredible guy. Incredible. He just had that knack of, he was very much, I don't know if he knew, he was like a psychologist. He understood different individuals, treated everyone different. We always have this mentality, oh, well, got to treat him the same. But he doesn't play the same as him, and he's not the same character. Why treat him the same? You know, he's a different character. So let's find out what triggers him and what makes him, and then maybe you have to come down harder on him, and why not? You know, it's just, you treated everyone different. And I think personally, you can get the best out of every individual. You know, and he read situations, he could calm situations down within seconds, just his experience, and, you know, and just love football, had that enthusiasm in first thing in the morning. No one was in before him, you know, and he was, you know, relatively an old man, you know, and that guy just loved, he was out there every day on the training pitch, never missed a minute, you know, but he was just bubbly and loved his job, and, you know, he was lucky because the jobs he had, but he had Newcastle at the end, you know, and it was a great job for him. He loved the club, but just wanted to attack. Let's just go and attack. Let's go and give them problems. And for me, as an attack is a dream.
Of course. You have to excuse me a little bit here, because we did, we got a little bit confused, but who was at Celtic?
Martin O'Neill.
It was Martin O'Neill.
Yeah.
And again, Martin O'Neill's been sort of what you were saying there about Bobby Robson and his man management skills. Well, how did Martin O'Neill compare?
He was, I think I'm about 5'6", 5'7", you know. That guy can make you feel 6'4", you know. He could easily, you know, you come in from a game, leading on to the next, that guy was just, he would come up to you and he would just say, do you know what, you were unplayable today, absolutely unplayable. Never looked you in the eye and then walk away, shook your hand, walk away, you know. Imagine being a player thinking, you know, imagine hearing that. Never 1 minute would we always, unfortunately, some of our, you know, some people from, you know, have this, well, don't tell him how good he is because he's relaxing, he's, you know, and it's, you know, what a load of rubbish. If he's that good, you go and tell him, you know,
credit where it's due,
exactly. And why not? Because you've got a player playing even better and working even harder for you, you know. So, what if the other players hear it? And do you know what? Because if you play, the other player will play well, you tell him exactly the same, you know, everyone wanted that. You know, that carrot. You know, everyone wanted that feeling. Everyone wanted him coming up to you saying how well he played, because he would. But he'd also go the other way as well. And that wasn't pretty. And it doesn't matter, even if I didn't play well, and I played well the week before, you get a bollocking. Oh, I don't think I can use that word.
No, sorry, you'd be all right.
A rollicking off him, you knew about it. He could make you feel that small. But it was that. That's the way to be. You know, it's if you play that well, he just made you feel like you're the best player in the world.
One of the managers probably who on paper you may know the best would be maybe Mark Hughes.
Yeah, he's just so professional, you know. He knows everything. He's just, you know, from... He wants to know everything, from sports science to, you know, let's be the best at this, get the training ground better, get the pitches better. The percentage of the ball has to be dead on, you know. It's just everything is just done and made sure so you're ready to perform.
And you first played for him for Wales?
Wales, yeah. Then I went to Blackburn with him and then Man City.
And how much of a factor was it going to play? I mean, was it that you were going to play under Mark Hughes or that you were going to sign for the teams that you were signing for?
I was going to play for him at Blackburn. Yeah, he was signing for Mark Hughes.
And
Man City was different.
A little bit different, obviously, because of the status of the club.
Man City was a chance to, you know, to play with players who were just, you know, the money they were going to spend and... You know, I was made fully aware of that, and it was just nice to, you know, I didn't know who was coming in, maybe a Samuel Eto'o, and it would be nice to try and compete for a position against people like him, or if not at worst, learn, see what I can learn in training off him.
Now, the next one is somebody I think, well, I'm definitely interested in hearing about because a little bit of an enigma, but Rafa Benitez.
Tactically, very, very good. Tactically, very, very good. Dictatorship. No one got close to him. He would sack his best friend tomorrow. You know, he lived that way. You know, he just got. I don't know. I think he's gone on record saying he has 4 hours sleep. It works the rest, and unfortunately, that's not healthy for you, because you know, I think he lost too many good people close to him because he thought they were either spying on him or, you know, he has so much to offer football, so much. He's, you know, tactic for what the opposition were going to present and cause you problems. That guy knew it off to a T.
So do you think
a genius, but with unfortunately that like Van Gogh sort of side? You know.
So do you think that we will see him back in the football management?
Yeah, definitely. He's got too much to offer not to.
And if we finish up on Kenny Dalglish?
Yeah, he was. Do you know what? It was difficult to watch him go because the players adored him. You know, he was, to watch that guy day in, day out, the presence he had at a club and what he meant to the club, but the warmth he showed everyone, players, kitchen staff, you know, kit men, you name it, every person in that club was treated exactly the same as if you were the best player in the club or you were the, you know, he just, everyone had that respect off him. You know, and he went out of his way for anyone. You had any type of problem, you could speak to him straight away, no matter what it was. You know, like, unfortunately, you know, he would say, my door's always open. And his door always was open. It was actually never shut for 1 minute, even if he was watching a game. And, you know, he just, as a human being, one incredible human being. One of the warmest, nicest guys I've ever come across and probably the best player I've ever, you know, been very fortunate to come across and to sign for a Liverpool football club under Kenny Dalglish as a Liverpool fan as a young kid was, you know, was a dream.
And he's steeped in that old Anfield tradition, isn't he? From, you know, a time where you could rise from boot boy to become manager almost, couldn't you?
Yeah. No, exactly. Mm. But, you know, he won a trophy there, didn't he? But it's what he means to the club. And, you know, maybe the league position probably might not have been where I think the players probably, you know, it could have been. Mm. But his standing will never sway from that club. You know, he will always be... Mm. You know, the number one player, probably the, you know, there's been some great people who've represented the club as well, but as a person as well, probably the number one figurehead that's ever been at that football club. And that'll never change.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for giving up your time
today.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and we all want to wish you all the best in everything you do in your future career and, of course, with all your work in Sierra Leone as well.
No worries. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. So that was the Craig Bellamy interview, and as we said at the top of the show, it's a real pleasure to meet him, and we're very grateful indeed to Craig for giving up so much of his time to give us such an honest and frank interview. I think it's very, very moving as well, Yusuf and Simon, I'm sure you're going to agree with me, the way that he paid tribute and spoke about Gary Speed. It's a difficult subject for him, and Si, you know, he was very openly emotional, wasn't he?
He was very emotional on the night, yeah, in... Talking to such a close friend, and it just showed how real close the friendship was, and like Craig himself, we still haven't really got over the shock of him dying.
Yes, it was a very moving and poignant moment, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, and it was very emotional in the studio. But one good thing for us that kind of put a positive slant on things, I think, the way he spoke about, I mean, we all saw from the outside what seemed to be something special happening, but he really gave us insight into what was really happening and how it was happening and you know, the type of manager that he was and how he went about making this this revival that he had planned for us, you know, the methods behind his logic, the logic behind his methods, rather. It was really great to get that sort of information that we're lucky to have, really.
Now, talking about his international career as well, I mean, you know, there were some incredibly revealing moments there, particularly, of course, use about the Toshack era.
Yeah, and, you know, any regular listeners of the show will know I was particularly critical of John Toshack at the time. And, I mean, at the end of the day, I've got nothing against John Toshack himself. He was a great footballer and has been a great manager. He tried to do a great thing for Wales. And, you know, we may be seeing slightly the rewards of his time. But it was really sort of, I don't want to sound bitter, but kind of just, you know, vindicated for me to see that. Because a lot of people that I spoke to, you know, a lot of people like to, if you say something controversial or a controversial view, people like to say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, you're just being controversial for the sake of it. But for me, it was great to hear, you know, you don't get much closer to the horse's mouth than we were that day. And it was good information that we got again.
Absolutely. And Simon, you said at the top of the show about the Sierra Leone work, and he said himself that he doesn't do it for any kind of personal recognition, but it is nevertheless very important that really people do know about that aspect of his life, because it isn't well publicised, whether he chooses to publicise it or not.
No, that's spot on. As you said, not that many people really know about Sierra Leone project and how to find out how it was set up. And as I said, he thought of how he'd like to see it progress with the youngsters over there, and he'd like it to go to Liberia, I think he was. Mm. I mean, if everything goes well. And it was really interesting to see the Craig talking about the conditions over there and the youngsters. And the one that really stands out is the player really stood out, but it ended up, he's 5 years older than he had to be. So unfortunately, he couldn't take him up on that chance.
That's right. And he has to be so selective.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's finish off then with our reflection on our interview. You were very, very keen indeed when we were doing our research and preparing for this interview to ask about you know, Craig's career, and particularly about the managers he's played under. And cracking question, it's given us such an insight, hasn't it, into the world of football.
Absolutely. I mean, the managers, that's the reason I was so keen, was because just looking through his career, I mean, people have known that he's played for a lot of clubs, but what people don't necessarily think about is the managers, and looking through the list, it really does read almost like a definitive who's who of modern football. There, obviously, there's some exceptions, but, you know, it's a pretty good list. And I was just delighted, really, that he didn't have to answer the questions in the way that he did. He could have given us snippets and we would have been happy with just a little bit of information. But he really gave us an inside scoop on the managers, and I feel like I know a little bit more about football just from sitting throughout the whole interview. Really, I felt like I learned a lot about modern football through the interview, but especially in that particular part of the interview, it was brilliant for me. It really was my highlight.
Great stuff. Well, Yusuf, thanks very much for your reflections, and you too, Si. And don't forget that you'll be able to download the show permanently as a podcast from iTunes. We're going to leave it on there for some time, so you'll be able to reflect. You can give your opinion to the interview on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/RadioCardiffMNSS. But from Yusuf, Simon and myself, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.